We're all trying to raise, the best humans that we can to change the future of the world.
Welcome back, listeners. Super excited to announce today's guest. This is episode 3 of Manifesting Motherhood with Cheyenne, Jin, and our beautiful guest today, Claudia. Claudia is a new mom. She is mommy to an 8-month-old baby girl. She's a behavioral analyst and she's managing mom life, wife life, work life, you name it. Let's introduce Claudia.
Hello, it's great to be here. Thank you.
And thank you for being here. As we just mentioned, all those things you're balancing and you're, taking the time to be on Just Know Though. So thank you so much for your time.
Yes, we appreciate you. No one knows, but we record these like Wednesday nights, and we were just talking about how like Wednesdays are like hump days, and it's also nighttime. I like made dinner. I had spam and rice. I was like, I'm making spam and rice is what we're having tonight, and I'm over it. So yes, I can imagine you juggling everything. So yeah, we appreciate you making the time.
Yeah, no, it's I like when I need help, I'll ask for it. Like tonight, I told my husband from like a week in advance, you're gonna have to take on dinner tonight because there's no way I can make a meal, tend to the baby, and then still record a podcast.
Right. And how has that been, that balancing act?
It's definitely a lot. Wearing multiple hats definitely comes with some burnout. But it's also, I don't know, it's so rewarding because when I was on maternity leave, I just dedicated myself being at home with the baby and my husband. And you kind of get lost in it, And so when I went back to work, it started kind of like dawning on me as the weeks got closer, like, oh no, I'm gonna have to adjust again and go back to work. But it was actually a more positive experience than I anticipated, because I jumped right back into my role as Claudia, the behavior analyst, something that I consider myself pretty good at. So it was nice to like take a breather from home life, like being a wife, being a mom, to being a behavior analyst. I feel like the balance kind of helps me sustain. Of course, like my husband is the best partner and the best support partner because he can read me pretty well. I'm not the most vocal about when I'm like feeling exhausted and need to take a break. So he picks up on my energy right away and he's like, hey, Claudia, like, do you want me to take over the baby? Or like, it's like he encourages me to like do things that Claudia used to do before becoming a mom, which is really helpful because I get to bring those things into momhood, hanging out with my girlfriends, getting my nails done. And so there's joy. There's joy in the balancing act for sure.
Shout out to your amazing husband and his energy reading capabilities and stepping up when he needs to.
He's definitely the strong one in our communication skills. He's always the one that opens up that channel for us to have conversation because I'm one that kind of suppresses things. I'm just like in survival mode and I'll suppress things until I pop, but he's so good at like catching me before I hit my breaking point for sure.
Wow.
Two. Yeah. Get yourself a partner that can read your mind. Yeah.
Right.
So dope. So, Claudia, thank you for sharing that. Do you want to describe your motherhood journey to us? And also just for the audience so we can kind of get a sense on where you're at in your motherhood journey.
Yeah, you ladies mentioned I'm a first-time mom to an 8-month-old baby girl, Capri. And so let's see, this dates back to 2020, the year that things changed. So we were about almost, gosh, we were maybe like 6 months into being husband and wife. We had gotten married in 2019. I don't feel like we ever really had a conversation like, oh, we're ready to be parents, but it's something that we both have always wanted. I've always known that I wanted to be a mom. You kind of wait for, that you're gonna have this like moment where you're just like, okay, great. Like today's the day. Like now, we're ready to be parents. We've checked off all the ideologies, getting married and being financially stable. But we were hitting all those check boxes and it still wasn't really feeling right, to become parents. We just left it in God's hands. We were just like, we know this is what we want, but we're always growing. We're always building on our character and building our careers. And so we're evolving continuously. So we were never gonna have a moment where it was the right moment to become parents. At the beginning of the pandemic, basically, right before the pandemic began that we took that leap. And so I did fall pregnant in April. I found out Mother's Day that I was pregnant. However, that pregnancy is not the pregnancy that resulted with my 8-month-old baby girl. It actually ended up being a miscarriage. It was probably one of the worst times of my life. I had never dealt with anything like that in my life. Like, I've never suffered a sudden loss. I've lost grandparents, but that kind of prepare yourself for something like that because they're aging and you see their health deteriorating. And so for something to be ripped out of my hands like that, it was one of the darkest times of my life. You feel so isolated. Despite it being a pandemic, it was so isolating. You feel like you're the only person that's ever gone through it because nobody talks about it. It wasn't until I went through it myself did I discover that this is so common. You know, 1 in 4 women has suffered some kind of a loss. I didn't know anybody aside from my mom who had suffered a loss 40 plus years. That kind of gave me the courage, you know, today to speak about it because I don't ever want anybody to feel isolated, that they're the only ones going through this, because it is so common. It's so common and it shouldn't be a taboo. It's not anybody's fault that this has occurred. And so obviously, like, I'm so much better. It was a dark time, but I had the support system that helped me through it. I had my faith. I never questioned God why this happened to me. My faith, I think, really held me up. Yeah, that was what occurred. And given my OB's advice, he told me to wait a few months. I think it was like 3 months after the miscarriage before we tried again. And I was so fortunate that the first cycle that we tried, I became pregnant. And so that's how 9 months later, we have little baby Capri. That was the initiation of my motherhood. I consider myself, from the moment that I got pregnant with the first baby, I considered myself as a mother, you know, because you experience so much, like you're already caring so much for that little life that you're carrying. You know, whether you have little angel babies or babies on earth, you know, you are a mom, definitely.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I feel like a collective breath in a moment is really necessary, you know, and you're completely right to say, like, people don't talk about miscarriage and people don't normalize it. And we're not necessarily creating a spider web of support for when women do experience that, you know, and maybe this is a start for like how we can improve that, make sure that women don't feel isolated. But I guess what's coming up for me is like, what was most helpful for you in that time?
I think it was just really, nobody had to tell me that it was going to be okay. It's just like, be in that moment with me, be an empath with me. Because I can tell you what actually hurt during the time that I was experiencing my miscarriage was toxic positivity. You know, I faced that while I was in the emergency room. That was probably the first taste I had of it. So it was during COVID. So I had to go to the emergency room by myself. My husband couldn't come with me. The ER doctor, like, they're not trained in OB gynecology, you know, they're ER doctors. Like, they're very responsive and, you know, they do their job to take care of the matter that they're being faced with. As they were treating me, as a doctor was treating me, he said, you know, Claudia, well, at least you know you can get pregnant. And I was like, you know, in like my mind, I was like, those aren't the words I want to hear. I don't care about the future pregnancies that I can have or whether my uterus is functioning or, you know, what my biological, physiological means are at the moment. Things like that where I'm like, you don't see it. Like, my world is ending right now. You know, I don't need for you to be thinking ahead on my future pregnancies, whether I can get pregnant or if this is a good indicator, because for me right now, this is the worst thing that could be happening to me. That was probably one moment that really sticks out. Same with like, well, you know, like, Claudia, it was not meant to be. I think people just use those moments because it's so uncomfortable for them. So uncomfortable for them to be faced with something like that, because we don't have explanations as to why things like that happen. And so it's kind of comforting for them to say things like that. I'm pretty sure I'm guilty of saying things like that in the past, because until I went through it, I didn't have an understanding. I didn't understand, you know, asking people like, oh, do you have kids? How triggering that might be. It's never a question I ask somebody for the means of small talk, but I had to go through a miscarriage to understand that those topics are not of conversation.
Wow, you're so nice about it. Seriously, you explained it so gracefully. Really quick, because I heard of toxic positivity, but I actually had to like actually do some research on it. So just food for thought, mainly for the audience. also self-educating myself. You're totally on point. Toxic positivity can actually harm people who are going through difficult times, rather than being able to share genuine human emotions and gain unconditional support. Yeah, you wanted that unconditional support, right? You didn't need all these little like disingenuous comments to make themselves feel like, well, at least I said something. Sometimes I feel like I'd rather just be silent. You know what I mean? No, thank you for bringing that up, because I also did not know how triggering it is when you do ask someone, do you have kids? Because they might be trying or, you know, experiencing a loss. So No, thank you for bringing that up.
Right. I work with kids, special needs kids, typically kiddos who are on the autism spectrum. And I remember I left work for a few days due to the miscarriage. And when I returned, my first day back at work, one of the moms, we were doing telehealth. We were doing the behavioral sessions through Zoom. And one of the moms, she was having a really tough time with her daughter. And she looked right at the camera and she's like, Claudia, do not have kids. And like, she jokingly like said it. And I love this mom. Like, she was great. And I know she had no ill intent, but I was like smiling and like crying on the inside, because I was like, I wish I could scream it, saying, you know, like, this is what I like long for in this moment. So those were like the more toxic interactions I had. But now thinking about it, it's like bringing back, oh, well, you know, it was meaningful and really helped me cope. So my love language is acts of service or gifts. And I had a friend who just showed up to my doorstep with a lasagna. Like, she just made a lasagna and cried with another friend. Like, she showed up the next day with coffee. And so, you know, like, those moments stick out just as much as like the toxic positivity and like those little comments I heard throughout.
No, that's a good tip. And like, I get teary eyed thinking about that. Because, you know, those little things do matter when you're going through it, whatever it is. It really does matter when someone takes the time to do something without you asking. Shan, what were you thinking?
I just love how you brought up that your friends know your love language. We should take more time to learn each other's love languages, and not just in intimate romantic relationships, but friendships, you know, between mothers and daughters and mothers and sons, or family relationships. Even work relationships, you know, especially if you're really building that relationship with someone. Because, you know, I think that's where toxic positivity really falls short, is you think you're doing the right thing, but you don't actually take the time to learn or understand what that person needs and what is the quote unquote right thing. You're just listening to respond, essentially. As you highlighted, it does more harm than anything else. And 2 years later, Claudia is still like, yeah, that was not what I needed at all in those moments when I was grieving. Toxic positivity has such a ripple effect.
I guess I didn't realize how there's a lot of people out there that don't know how to respond and say these little things. Because in my head, I'm also thinking about coworkers to myself that are saying like, don't have kids, or in meetings, right? And like, you know, they're saying it jokingly, but it's like, I feel the same way. And then there's times where like men will come up, men like that you work with, right? Oh, do you have a family? Do you have kids? And I have to be like, no, not yet. And in my head, I'm like, God willing, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like these little things I'm realizing after you said it that pop up.
Yeah, I think it's a bigger like conversation about just like completely reimagining and restructuring our interactions. And I do feel like collectively as a society, we're at the tipping point of doing that for so many things. You know, conscientious parenting is like a big thing that's happening right now. Naming toxic positivity, normalizing miscarriage, us talking about love languages when it comes to relationships. I wasn't taught that as a child. Like, oh, you can actually learn how someone gives and receives love. Mm-hmm. It's really beautiful.
Did you guys know children also have love languages?
For sure.
No, I never actually thought about it.
There's like a book on it too. The same author, Cheyenne? I didn't read it.
I don't know.
I just saw it on Google.
I'm going to Google it right now.
One thing, while you're Googling that, Cheyenne, I do want to go into, I love how you said you left it in God's hands and you didn't question, you never questioned it, like, why, right? That's super powerful and, like, special to hold on to that hope, your faith during, like you said, one of the hardest times in your life. So I just wanted you to touch on that. I think that's super beautiful.
Yeah, so I think I had it easy, honestly, because we got pregnant right away. You know, there wasn't much waiting for me. I think I probably would have questioned my faith if I had to wait a year, 7 years, you know, much longer. I had to trust in God for that time period, and it didn't extend beyond that, because I think then I would have been, you know, really discouraged and asking, you know, why me? Why did this happen? My mom is my rock, you know, when it comes to faith. I lean on her because I see how much she believes in God and she believes in miracles. And so I always take comfort in knowing, like, well, if I'm starting to feel discouraged, if I'm losing my faith, I can count on my mom. And I know she's praying for me right at this moment. Like, I know she's praying for me when she goes to Mass on Friday mornings, because she goes throughout the week, aside from Sundays. If it weren't for my mom having such strong faith, I definitely would have probably been a little more lost.
God is good.
Yeah, and I appreciate when people pray for me or pray for others. Like, I'd rather have someone pray for me. I don't know, say I'm thinking of you or something like that. I just think it's really intimate. And it's sometimes it's like when you are going through a hard time, and like sometimes you're like, all I'm doing is praying, you know. It's like I pray and I'm constantly like asking for stuff, and then you don't want to keep asking. I don't know if you guys feel like that. So it's really nice when someone else is thinking of you and praying for you. So I'm really happy that you had your mom. Super special to have that, where you know you can count on them to be that additional voice to God for you.
Absolutely. And that just brings up something I saw in your form, was that it takes a village. Mm. So who is your village?
Yeah, so my village, it's definitely my mom. And so I have two sisters and a brother, and they're all part of that village. And I think this is what helps keep my mom guilt at bay. So my younger sister is the one that watches my baby when I'm at work. Here at my house. Mm-hmm. I'm so fortunate that my sister comes to my house, watches the baby while I'm at work. I'm so comfortable. You know, like, I trust my sister wholeheartedly. I know that she's doing the best job with my baby girl. So that helps put my mom guilt to ease. You know, I'm able to go to work and perform as best as I can, despite the sleep deprivation, because now parenthood entails all this brain fog that nobody tells you about. If I need to, like, say, get my nails done on the weekend while my husband's at work and my sister's hanging out with her boyfriend, I know I can count on my mom to watch the baby. And it's just so comforting knowing that it's my immediate family that's part of my village, because I do trust them so much. And I know that I'm also giving my baby the opportunity to develop these relationships, you know, with them, to sustain these relationships. She doesn't only see her aunt or her grandma like on a monthly basis. She sees them pretty regularly. And moms, like my mom, she has so much wisdom. You know, sometimes I do challenge her, because obviously I'm a millennial mom, so I do things the millennial way, but she has so much wisdom, and it's amazing to see her apply that to my daughter.
I just think it's amazing how you have that relationship with your mom.
No, it is definitely a privilege for sure. And that's what I was actually thinking about in my mind. Like, you know, how do we establish villages for mothers who don't have that relationship and don't have that immediate family? Because, yeah, it's completely different to be like, oh, my daughter's taken care of by my sister, who I'm sure, you know, holds very similar morals and values and handles things relatively similar to you, versus like, I have to entrust my baby with a complete stranger.
You have me, girl.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. My friends are always ready, you know, to like watch the baby or like hang out with her. Like, they ask me like, oh, what are you up to this weekend? I'm like, oh, you know, I don't really have plans. And they're like, let's take the baby to the park, you know, like, let's go hang out, let's go have a picnic. You know, my friends are also very well ingrained into that village. My mom, I think she's like the one that stands out the most in the village, because I aspire to be just like her. She set the bar, you know, for me. She set the bar as to what I want to be, or like what I want to instill in my daughter, and, you know, like how I want my daughter to perceive me as.
I love that. Cheyenne, I think you're just going to have to be a change maker. And, you know, be that person to start that for your kids. Big step. But I understand what you're saying. I think that's super important, because it is a privilege to have that really, like, intimate, immediate village. Right? And sometimes other people have to build their own village and kind of select who they want in it.
Yeah. And I think babies definitely bring people together, so it helps with the village building.
Definitely. Did we figure out the five love languages for babies, for children?
Oh, yes. Thank you for circling back to that. Yeah, the same person, Gary Chapman, he does have a Five Love Languages of Children book as well. So that's pretty cool that he defines it. But yeah, when you said that, I was just like, oh, for sure, because I remember being a child and being like, I obviously like things this way, but no one's meeting my needs this way, you know? And I also work with youth. I was a second grade teacher for 5 years, and now I work with TAE, transitional aged youth. And yeah, you can almost like notice it in some children immediately if they're physical touch. Like they will run up and jump on you, you know? They'll be pulling on your arm all day or acts of service, like, I need this, I need that, you know, always asking for something. Or if they love words of affirmation, they love praise, they love being told they're beautiful, they're smart, uplifted. I definitely think, though, that we are all a bit of all of them, and then just have certain ones that are really kind of our key love languages.
No, I seen that the other day and I was like, wow. I didn't think I really thought of that, the how children had their own love language, but they just can't communicate it like how we can process and communicate it, I guess, right? We can pinpoint it or at least get a sense of what we like or what makes us feel loved. But for children, I guess we think of it, they can't really pinpoint like, I like when you tell me you love me, right? No, I'm glad we brought that up.
Yeah, me too. And then, you know, also like now that we know this, we can encourage children to like have those processes and figure out like, well, how do you like, you know, me to address you or show my love to you? Or how do you like to give me your love?
I have a niece who it's very clear that her love language is words of affirmation because she'll like throw on a new princess dress. She loves Frozen and she'll look at us and she's like, "Do I look beautiful?" We're like, "Yes, you're beautiful." Or if we compliment, like if somebody comes and visits and they compliment my baby, they're like, "Oh, she's so cute." And she's tuning in. She's like, "Am I cute?"
Oh
She's like, me,
my
me,
God.
me.
Oh. No, that's a good thing. I wonder, I'm very curious, Claudia, on what your baby girl's love language is gonna be.
Probably going to be affection because her dad smothers her, so I think he's already shaping her to like
Oh.
affection.
Yeah, and that's a good point, you know, like nature versus nurture, like what does shape our love languages? That's a really good point.
This is giving me a lot to think about without expecting it. Claudia, so on your journey, where did we leave off? We talked about did we talk about how you, I think we slowly talked about how you returned to work.
But I guess I kind of made it seem like I popped this baby out and you know it was like let's go. I like didn't even really talk about the birth or like the postpartum period.
Yeah, let's do that since it's like fresh.
Yeah, no, I had a very positive pregnancy. It was enjoyable. Of course, because of what had like the circumstances of what had occurred previously, I was kind of like really nervous at first, hyper focused on my symptoms. Like, was I feeling nauseated? Was I not, you know, really anxious for my monthly appointments to roll around? But after probably like the first 3 months, then I was like, okay, Claudia, you know, like it's gonna be okay. Just enjoy this. From that point on, I did have a very positive pregnancy. It was pretty active. I would go on walk, was working from home at the time. Work schedule was really flexible. Actually, yeah, it wasn't the super positive experience though, because it was still during the pandemic. So the uncertainties of the pandemic, like knowing that I was going to have to labor without possibly a support partner was like a factor because I did choose to have a hospital birth. So I wasn't able to have my mom there during the birth. They actually did increase the policies to have one support partner. So my husband was actually present. And so I had her in late June. I have a really good relationship with my OB. I trust him so much. He knew I wanted a very low intervention type of birth. I wanted to do it unmedicated. So he was like, okay, you know, I support you. I reviewed my birth plan, or I guess you can't really call it plan because you can't really plan how your labor and delivery is going to go. So it was like my birth preferences. I showed him a sheet, like I made a whole visual for him. And I said, this is what I want. This is what I don't want. He basically said, yeah, you know, basically everything that was on that sheet, it was attainable. So that was really comforting knowing that, you know, my OB stands by this. So when I show up to the hospital, the nurses are going to respect my wish, which they did. Around like midnight that we showed up to the hospital, we were admitted around 4 a.m. And I labored for about 16 hours and I pushed for 20 minutes, it was so surreal. You know, like I've read a quote where it says that women like leave their bodies to the stars, like they leave, go to the stars, retrieve their newborn and come back. And I almost want to say that that totally happened because it's an out of body experience. Like I remember it as if it were a dream and it wasn't that long ago. And I don't know if it's because it's such like there's so much going on or, you know, you actually do leave your body, like your soul leaves your body to retrieve that other soul. I would do it again. You know, I asked myself, like, would you do this unmedicated though, Claudia? Because it was exhausting. Like, I'm not going to lie, not even the pain was bearable, but the exhaustion after that, I totally dismissed the fact that I was going to have to tend to a newborn afterwards. I was running on zero energy. So that's where I questioned, like, Claudia, are you sure you want to do your next labor unmedicated? So that's kind of a question that's still up in the air, but mostly not because of the pain. I know a lot of people question it because of the pain, but more so the energy that I need to conserve for the following days.
Thank you for sharing that. I love to hear how you touched on like the spiritual aspect of labor.
I've never heard of that.
I have heard of that story. And recently, and probably, you know, because we're doing this podcast, Manifesting Motherhood, and we're on our motherhood journeys, but my TikTok has like completely become like mother talk. And yeah, a birth doula, she was talking about like the spiritual side of labor and just how spiritual, like it's not just emotional, it's not just intellectual, like it's so deeply spiritual. And in just how spiritual it is to have a womb as well. But another TikTok that I saw on mother talk was a woman talking about how in Korea, after you have your newborn, they take care of your newborn until you're like well rested. Because they acknowledge how exhausting labor is. And so instead of just like them handing you the baby and like, all right, good luck, they allow you time to like recoup and take care of your child until you're rested and you're ready for that.
I don't know what I'm talking about. Unmedicated is like nothing at all.
Right. So nothing at all. I think a very common intervention is like epidural, where they put the spinal tap, I think that's what it's called. And, you know, they numb your lower half. Pitocin is another form of intervention that they utilize in Western hospitals. So that to jumpstart labor for like those women who have a delayed birth or, you know, they're kind of going over the window that it's still safe to have a baby.
Wow. Yes. Honestly, I think I was pro epidural, but now I'm feeling like no epidural because I kind of want to have that experience, the out of body experience. Like I think I want to be like super present, but I don't know. But I think you made me change my mind about doing that.
Yeah, it's honestly like all mental. Mm. You know, I'm not one that practices meditation. Like I've tried it, but it's not for me. Or just like breathing techniques. Before I had a baby, that wasn't something I really practiced, but I knew like that's what everybody vouched. You know, they say, well, if you want to have an unmedicated birth, like you have to have your breathing down. You have to like get into that mindset. So I did it. I was like, okay, well, this is what I want and I'm going to stick to it. So you just have to really focus on your breathing. Charlie, my husband, he's a personal trainer. Like as my contractions were coming and going, he was literally counting like as if I were training. Like he'd do a countdown. And so like at one point my contractions were a minute long every 3 minutes and he was like counting it down. So it helped because see the end, you know, like he'd be like 10, 9, 8. And I'm like, okay, we're getting there. So that was really helpful.
Cool.
Love how you mentioned it's mental and mind over matter and using count and breath and rhythm to really get in that flow. I'm curious if you remember like the point where it was most spiritual, you could say, just because I've heard that the ring of fire, like the crowning is.
Yes. So I did a hospital birth, but that did not mean it was going to be a medical experience. I kept telling myself that and I told my doctor that. And so from the beginning, it was not a medical experience. You know, I'm like, I'm here just in case I need an emergency C-section, you know, or something like that. Not that I had a high risk pregnancy, but I rather be already in the space where I need the intervention. And so I just had the mindset that this is not a medical experience. It's a spiritual experience. But the ring of fire, it's not as bad. Don't watch. I hope you guys have not watched YouTube videos. Because that doesn't help. I avoided it at all costs because then those are like experiences that you might say, oh my gosh, that's how it's going to be for me. I avoided videos at all costs. It wasn't until after the fact that I would hear that the Ring of Fire was something. It happened really fast for me, so I don't even think I was able to wallow in that.
Okay. Yeah, no, definitely not watching birthing videos. That sounds terrible. But to each their own.
This is the first time me hearing what the Ring of Fire is.
No, I'm just one of six, and I've seen my mother give birth multiple times and my sisters give birth. So I love how you were like, this is a spiritual experience, not a medical experience, but also allowed yourself to like be in a hospital in case of anything. Sounds like you really thought all those things out and did what was best for you. And that actually reminds me of what I was going to say, which is I think every pregnancy, every childbirth is its very own unique thing. Even with doing this series and talking to all these mothers to gain wisdom and knowledge and experience, that doesn't mean that any of us are going to have that same experience, right? And even if you have multiple children, all your pregnancies and births can be completely unique in their own way.
Right. And I did take comfort in knowing that my mom and my sister have all had unmedicated birth, because they say, you know, your genes, your DNA kind of predestines how your labors will be. You know, I held on to that. I was like, well, you know, we have shared DNA and they haven't had a medicated birth, so I can do this. So I pulled from them for sure.
I love that.
That's, you know, that we talk so much about generational curses. Those are those generational strengths.
Yeah.
I may have missed it. Excuse me if I did. So you're thinking unmedicated next time as well?
Yeah, I probably was not clear at all because it's something that I like go back and forth on. I don't know, because I consider, you know, the fact that I'll probably have a toddler, you know, at home when I have that new baby. And it's like, I'm going to need as much energy as I can have. So would the epidural help me with that? I don't know. I have to really ask around. Yeah. You know, ask the moms that did have the epidural, you know, what their experience was like, their recovery experience.
You're gonna have to do what they do in Korea, girl. Let everybody know you're resting.
Exactly. Tap into that village that you got.
Yeah, you got a good village. So
yes. Yeah. You're right. Yes.
Yeah, your Capri can go on a vacation for a week with her cousin and her princess dresses.
I love how you touch on that, Cheyenne. Generational strengths. I love that.
Yeah, that's what we want. That's what we want to hold on to and pass on to our new young life. And that's what I was really holding on to when Claudia was talking about how you admire your mother so much. You know, she is the epitome of love and of motherhood and things that you aspire to be. That's so beautiful. You know, once you break your generational curses and you get to that point, that is what those who are breaking those curses have to look forward to. Then generations after that are like, nah, we got it. And we're aspiring to this. We're holding on to this. This is what makes us who we are. We're not letting this go, you know. And then it's just like, copy and paste. Let's go. We have so much to look forward to on the other side of doing this tough work for sure. Yeah, that wholesomeness and that togetherness that I can really see you're exuding with your family after you experienced it as well.
Yes, it's definitely a bonding experience, you know. Now it's like you come into this new like unspoken clique. I mean, I have to acknowledge that there definitely is a lot of privilege in even having a say of where I want to labor, you know, because we have hospitals, we have at-home births, we have birthing centers. And something that my doctor kind of checked me really quick with was that he said, you know, I've been to other countries, Claudia, and they have unmedicated birth because they have no other option. You know, he's like, this is you deciding this for yourself. But, you know, I want you to understand that it's a privilege because the epidural can be painted in a bad light, but sometimes it's just necessary. It's a preference, you know, and great that we have that option. Definitely.
I agree.
Yeah.
We have choices, which is a blessing. But you gave me a lot to think about. Because now, like, do I want an epidural? But yeah, this is just a lot. And it's good. It's a lot of good things to think about. I was telling Claudia earlier, my mom had C-sections. I kind of have nothing to
do. Oh, wow. All four?
All four of us were C-sections. So I love this conversation and you talking about this. Because my mom even says, like, I don't remember anything. I had a C-section. The story about like grabbing the soul and like having an out-of-body experience. It's like the first time for me hearing that. I appreciate this.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about like where is childbirthing gonna go in the future? Because we've been having births since the beginning of time. Yeah, and when you were saying like how it is a privilege to have these choices and things like that, it's so true. But I also think about even with these privileges and these choices, like medical malpractice is still the third killer of people in the United States, and it's even higher for women in labor, and then especially if you're BIPOC in labor.
Definitely. And I think that's where I found comfort in knowing that I had my birth plan. The fact that I also trust my doctor completely, because without that trusting relationship, I don't know how I would have felt about everything. Because it is a known fact that for a Western developed country, we're not doing that great in mortality rates. My birth plan kind of served as a doula. The doula is somebody that you would hire, to kind of be your support person and guide you if things took a turn for the worse. I knew, like, if I'm not thinking clear right now, like, here's my plan. My husband had a copy. You knew what my wishes were.
Love that. So much to think about for a new mom. I could see how this is can would be overwhelming. I'm feeling a little overwhelmed right now, but in a good way.
Okay, so after you had your baby, how long were you on maternity leave? And then how was that transition back to work? I don't know if that fully got discussed. And I guess just for my own curiosity as well, how was like accessing maternity leave?
The process of accessing maternity leave is more complicated than it should be. I feel like the workplace kind of purposely makes it a task because, honestly, if I were to have to explain to somebody that's planning on going on maternity leave, I feel like I can't even give them an explanation of how to go about it because it was so unclear. The paperwork was tedious. The process was never clear. And I reached out to human resources multiple times asking them to clarify that for me. It's tricky, and I think it's tricky for a reason.
Right. Sounds very intentional.
Yeah, I did take a total of 6 months. So I work in education. So I had the summer off and then my maternity leave stacked up with that. So I didn't return to work until the baby was about 6 months old.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of. I've heard that it's like ridiculously complicated, intentionally complicated, as you name. And already we know that like in the United States we get a very low amount of maternity leave, if at all. So I don't know if your work provided it or you got it through the city that you live in. Another pain point for mothers as well, which reminds me of a meme I saw that was like, mothers are expected to be mothers like they don't work full time and be workers like they're not mothers.
Yeah, and I think this is maybe why like we're doing this manifesting motherhood because there's so much thinking and planning. I mean, I know Claudia, you said you left it in God's hands, but then these are kind of in the back of your head, right? Like, how much time am I gonna really get with the baby? Like, who's gonna watch the baby? Like these are things that you kind of start thinking of when you're, take that leap of faith and start trying. So yeah, I get you, Cheyenne. I was just telling Claudia, I was like, I'm trying to save up all of my vacation and all of my sick time.
Yeah, and this is honestly like you don't really think about it until you're in that postpartum period. Like, it's a factor, it's going to happen, but it doesn't really dawn on you your whole pregnancy because your whole pregnancy you're so focused on the birth. So until you enter that postpartum period, it dawns on you when you're like, oh wait, things are going to change. And so it's been a positive experience going back to work, but it's been a task, still exclusively breastfeeding. And so between like work calls and meetings and stuff, I still somehow managed to make it home and feed my baby. And so I feel like, I'm not the best employee because I'm not performing at like what I was when I was a single, newly certified behavior analyst. But it's not like I'm not meeting my job criteria. I'm still fulfilling my role, but I'm not fulfilling it above and beyond. And I don't know why I put that expectation on myself, because I'm not going to get paid anymore if I am going above and beyond. So those are things that they kind of hit you during that postpartum period.
Have y'all seen that Netflix series, Genderfied?
No.
Okay, I like it. I think it's funny. But they touch on this about how she was a new mom going back to work, breast, and she did feel like she had to be super good at her job. she also just felt guilty if she wasn't always like there and taking time away and taking breaks to breastfeed. Like, she was also in this balancing act. And I do think a lot of people feel like that. I actually have a mentor at work, and, you know, she was saying how she does feel like she could do more at work, but her kids take priority. I just wanted to tell her, like, who cares about work? You know what I mean? Like, you're a mom first. I like how you touched on that. Like, why do I feel like this? And I think we aren't going to be able to address this now. I think it's like a bigger thing to dive into. I like how you said you're not going to get paid more, you know, if you go above and beyond. So it's okay if you take a step back from like being that above and beyond for work, because you're doing reallocating time to your family. You don't have that, like, work is no longer a priority, like, you're a mom first. So I don't know, I kind of just want to give that food for thought and just like comfort for anyone listening, and just also for you. I don't know, I hate when people talk like that. Like,
yeah, me too.
I feel like I should be doing more, or like judged. Mm-hmm. I feel like internally judged.
Yeah.
Because they're a mom, because they're doing X, Y, and Z for the kids.
Yeah, and Claudia did tap into mom guilt a little bit earlier, but I completely agree, Jen. And I think, like, now more than ever is a time to play the game, or play the system, or F the man, or however you want to say it, because if people are not going to acknowledge that motherhood is literally one of the most difficult jobs, it is a job, and not pay mothers to be jobs and require that mothers work and be jobs, then do the bare minimum. Master, still getting that paycheck, but being able to prioritize motherhood and breastfeeding. That's incredible that you're exclusively breastfeeding and working. Like, just want to give you a so big round of applause.
Yeah, because that's like every 2 hours.
Now she's eating solid, so it kind of spreads it out a little. So like every three-ish hours.
No, yeah. And then they can get above and beyond later after she's four. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I have these moments where, you know, between all my work tasks, I have to tend to my daughter. But I also acknowledge, because I'm like, you know, Claudia, you come with so much wisdom now. Like, you perceive the world as a mom. Mm. Mm-hmm. The kids that you work with have mothers who you have meetings with, mm-hmm. and all they want is for their child to thrive in the school system, mm-hmm. you know? And mm-hmm. so now I see their approach and how they're interpreting all the recommendations that I give, you know, because before I would give recommendations that I'm like, I look at now and I'm like, why was I asking a parent of four? Ignore the screaming, you know, you'll get through it. Just write it out, you know? And I'm like, that is impossible. And so I have a different understanding. So I come with a different perspective, which is useful to the families that I work mm-hmm. with, but of course a different approach, and I have to get comfortable with it now.
Right, because that's not necessarily the narrative that we're fed. And so you have to learn how to uplift that for yourself. But I love that you are, and that you're understanding, like, this is an invaluable asset. You know, maybe it's not a certification, but I went to space and got my baby and came back, okay?
No, it really is. Moms have such great wisdom, and they can multitask and prioritize. And so I honestly feel like moms should get a pay raise just for being moms, because it is that, like...
I love that idea. Jen for president. That is an amazing idea.
I was going to say, vote for me.
For real, though.
No, but really, it's like we take into account all these work experiences, but Claudia, like, you're bringing a different perspective and offering, you're able to have more valuable, like, firsthand experience to give to work, right? Which is, like, especially if your clients or, you know, who you're helping are mothers, that is valuable, and that's a plus. So I really like how you said that. Yeah.
So I'm an expert in behavior, and then at the meetings we have other experts in, like, school psychology, and we have principals present and the parent present. And it wasn't until I had my daughter that I realized we all have great interests for this learner, you know, to advance in the school setting, but nobody cares about their success more than the parents, you know. And I had never really seen it that way, because I just, well, these are my recommendations, they're evidence-based, the expert in behavior, so I know best in this department. Where it's like, no, Claudia, this is the child's parent. They know them best. They care about where they're going to be in 20 years, if they can use self-care skills when they pass, you know, when mom and dad are no longer in their life. So it wasn't until recently I tapped into that. And again, it goes back to, until you go through it, do you grow an understanding of it?
That is so true. You know, being someone who is a former teacher and worked in a district for a while, yeah, there are so many staff who, deem parents as not caring, when in fact, parents, they're the ones who will go to battle and toe to toe every day, all day. That's like triggering for me, honestly, because I just feel like parents don't get the respect that they deserve, especially when a child is, has an IEP or is deemed with a learning disability or things like this. And, I know from working in that field, a lot of parents then internalize that as, it's something that they did, and then kind of doesn't allow them to necessarily advocate the best that they would like to, because then that narrative is also being held up by the people who work at the school and with their children. Parents are rock stars.
Gosh, I feel like we touched on like a lot in this hour. It was so good. The return to work, birthing experience, having faith through all of it, having a village. Claudia or Cheyenne, anything else that you guys want to touch on?
And through it all, like the common denominator is that as a new mom, as a working mom, I have to give myself grace. And I think that's what helps me get through it all. Because I've always been my toughest critic. I feel like that's one of my biggest areas of growth since becoming a mom, is that I've learned to give myself grace in all areas. Like as a wife, as a mom, as an employee, as a working mom, because there's no way I can tackle all three evenly. Like I can't distribute Claudia evenly every single day. You have to have, your village that helps you, or your partner that is understanding, that knows things are going to ebb and flow. I feel like that's the thing that I have to remind myself. Like, Claudia, give yourself grace. Like, you're trying as best as you can. It helps ease my mom guilt. That helps me get through the day for sure.
I love that. Grace is
Yeah,
something
me
that
too.
we have to learn to do and be super cautious, like to give yourself grace. So I love that, Claudia. Is there one thing you wish you knew starting on this journey, or one piece of advice besides the grace? We can leave it at grace because that's beautiful.
I was like fixated on prepping a nursery before baby arrived, and I can tell you that nursery has not even been used. It was not necessary. The AAP recommends that babies sleep in mom and dad's room for the first year of life, and that's what we've been doing. She's been co-sleeping, like she had her bassinet there sleeping in our room, and her nursery is just our laundry room at the moment. And so you think, I need to like prepare and have this crib and this like Pinterest-y little nursery ready with this like very specific theme, it's not going to be used. I can guarantee you that. And aside from that, like you do get engulfed in buying all these gadgets for baby. Especially like the wedding industry preys, on like brides. It's like a multi-million dollar industry. Same with baby, like the baby product industry. It's the same thing. I'm the type of person that, like, if I'm going to purchase something, I'll research it. If I'm going to buy a bassinet, I'm going to cross-reference reviews, watch YouTube videos, pull up consumer reports. And
I love that. Yes.
So like you get lost in, like I need all of these things to be, this great parent, and you don't. You really don't need half of the things that you put on your baby registry. The one thing that sticks out to me that I said long before I was a mom was that I was going to buy the Owlette sock. And have you heard about this? It's this little sock that you put on babies. It connects to an app on your phone and it reads their pulse and oxygen. And I said, great, like that's the cure for SIDS.
Oh, okay.
It's gonna give me a peace of mind. And instead, I had more anxiety just thinking like, what if it tells me she's not breathing at this time? I could not bear putting the sock on her foot. And so I ended up just returning it. And there's so many products like that that just prey on the new parent that are not necessary. And I did check with a pediatrician, because I had the item and I was like going back and forth. Should I keep it? Should I not? I asked the pediatrician, is there any pro to having this? And they said, babies that are like NICU babies that are sent home with the medical grade version of that do not have a better outcome than if they were not sent with something like that. So they're like, nope, it's not necessary. Like, you can go ahead and return that. That's one of the many things that we did not need.
That is great advice. That
super is great advice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Amazing advice. All that plastic, colorful junk, save it, put it in a college fund, buy a house with a backyard. Yeah, that is amazing advice. They definitely prey on new moms, for sure. Save that money and feed yourself a delicious meal so you're happier and want to, you know, spend more time with your baby or whatever it is. But love that. Love both of those. I'm so happy we're ending on those notes. Yeah, and just great food for thought overall, Claudia. Thank you for sharing this time and space with us. I know you're a new mom. You work, as we mentioned. You have a lot on your plate. You're a wife. So this hour that we spent together is very precious. And thank you again.
Yes. No, it was such an honor, honestly. And I was so nervous coming into this, but you ladies have this like energy that is so calming.
So thankful. Maybe because like me and Cheyenne are not on this, we're not there yet, but it might be like the next phase. And I don't know, Cheyenne, I feel like I'm like, I'm so thankful. So I'm super thankful that you came on and that your experience is so fresh and shedding light on how common miscarriages are. Like you said, 1 in 4, and staying steadfast on your faith and just giving these like really great mom tricks. So super thankful. And I feel like we need to have like a mommy and me group. Me and Cheyenne aren't there yet, but you know what I mean? I think that'd be so fun.
Our community for sure needs it.
I would love to have a mommy and me podcast. Me and Cheyenne were just talking about how we didn't realize until doing this Manifesting Motherhood series that there's not really like a space to just talk about these, all of these things that people don't want to talk about.
Yeah, it's like when you like go through a bad relationship and no one wants to hear it. I feel like that's the same category that mothers in. It's like no one wants to see all these pictures and hear all these stories and these things, but it's like this is so important. And mothers need that space and deserve that space. So,
And it's not all black or white, right? Like every mom is going to choose what's best for their child. You know, whether like one mom chooses to, you know, breastfeed or formula feed, like not one way is the right way. There's so much judgment that can be passed through just decisions like that that we make. I mean, we're all trying to raise, you know, the best humans that we can to change the future of the world. And if we don't have the space where we can share ideas and bounce off of each other, then
And make mistakes,
something has to change.
Another great point.
We all have the same mission.